So on to today's episode about the movies, I'm talking to director Amy Miller about her new documentary film, Manufacturing the Threat. So this documentary explores the issue of agent provocateurs and entrapment in Canada's national security apparatus known as CSIS. Through the story of John Nuttall and Amanda Carroty as the main example for this documentary. So for the first question, maybe you can explain to our audience who are unfamiliar with the story of John Nuttall and Amanda Carroty what their story is, and as well to why their story is important to the issue of the CSIS provocateurs and entrapment. And what were your general interests inside their story as well too? I know it's pretty much a loaded question, but yeah.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, the case of Omar and Anna that the documentary focuses on is a really tragic one, and it really shows that, there doesn't have to be a logic in terms of who might be targeted by the RCMP and by CSIS and might be understood as a terrorist and then treated as such. And in their case, it became very clear in the appeal process that they experienced that they had been completely entrapped, that essentially from minute one, it was the RCMP and CSIS that orchestrated the whole act that they were then accused of doing, which was planting a fake bomb on the BC legislator legislation, sorry. And essentially, these were a marginalized couple who had a lot of mental health, lived in poverty. They were a marginalized couple, and they had been on the radar. They got on the radar of the RCMP through a neighbor that heard Omar yelling at one time with some catchphrases that alarmed their neighbor. Which went up the kind of flagpole of the police to the RCMP. They got on their radar. These are things where it's just like, are they jihadists? This couple had just recently converted to Islam. They had very little relationship to the Muslim community. They, had been given a Quran at a grocery store, corner store, befriended someone and converted. So from this one phone call that their neighbor made, they got on the radar of the RCMP. And obviously, we don't know what it is that made the RCMP say, you know what? Let's have dozens and dozens of agents now orchestrate a whole illusory scenario that will lead these people to believe they are jihadists, and that if they don't do what we say, that they will fear their lives and the lives of their family, which led them to go along with the, unbeknownst that it was a police operation, but of planting this false bomb on the BC legislature.
Let me point to one scene inside a particular within the movie, just for our audience. When Omar is making a meet inside of a hotel with one of the people who are providing the items for the bomb, and Omar goes, "Yes, they said that you would be providing, the items for the bomb, and it's for our plans." And then the gentleman just leaves. And then he goes back to the original agent that had set up. And then the agent goes, No, you can't say that. It has to be your plan. It has to be your plan. You have to go back in there and sell it as your plan." And then Omar goes back inside the hotel. And just like the agent said, he tries to make amends with the person and tries to sell it as his plan, solely his plan, nobody else's, which is how CSIS and the agent set that one up. So Canada in general has always had a history of these people and the government interfering with certain groups. Maybe you can discuss on to how has this ramped up since 9/11, and has the government had more of a green light for these projects, or given them more of a carte blanche in essence with CSIS?
Yeah, sure. Rami, there was a lot in that question. So I'm going to just try to break it down. I'm going to start with saying that we have to understand that there's big money in national security agenda, right? So particularly since 9/11, we've seen in the last 25 years just a constant increase in budgets. You know, national security is a catchphrase, and there's lots of big money that private industry has profited from. So there's self-interest in play where, hey, if these profits can continue to rise, if the budgets can continue to rise, you know, there's a lot of people who will benefit from that. So we need to have terrorists to fight, you know, to be able to justify the budgets. Well, you know, is what the film argues is what the national security apparatus in Canada does. And so if we don't actually have terrorists, well, we better create them, right? And the film shows that throughout the history of Canada, from the onset of the development of the RCMP, you know, that was set up to clear the plains in Western Canada and, you know, take over the land of Indigenous peoples for resource extraction, there has always been the, you know, play of othering certain communities to create, you know, a boogeyman reality where people need to say, oh, well, we're afraid of them. You know, we have to be protected from them. So there's always an us and a them when it comes to national security that's played out in Canada in terms of targeting different communities, almost exclusively communities of color and people of color, and, you know, religious communities as well. And we've seen in the last 25 years, it's particularly Muslims in Canada that have gotten the short end of the stick when it comes to who are the terrorists, whether or not there's actually any reason to believe that. The film argues that, wait a minute, we collectively, as Canadians, need to enlarge our understanding and scale and scope of what is national security, and that we absolutely need to incorporate the largest threat that we're all collectively facing on this planet, which is the climate crisis. And that if we include that in our understanding of national security, and if we understand that throughout history, there have been communities and people who have been targeted falsely under the auspice of being terrorists to justify the continuation of the national security apparatus, then the most likely people to be brushed with that identity are going to be Indigenous people and climate justice activists while we're, you know, in this confrontation of the crisis with the climate right now. So, and that these tactics are going to be used against them. So I just wanted to mention that whether or not there's more cases of entrapment and infiltration happening in Canada, it's really, really difficult to say, Remy, because the Canadian state and our policies are not transparent. Right? It's shockingly disappointing and discouraging if you try to actually get information to see how difficult it is. And people who are familiar with trying to get access to information laws or to get this kind of data will be like, yes, of course. But I think the mass majority of Canadians don't realize that it's not... We're not in a condition of being able to easily access this information. In fact, there's just block for people who want to have this knowledge and this information. The cases that are focused in the film and that are showed, we only know about those because we had a situation where either there was an appeal case that happened. So in the case of Omar and Anna, it went all the way to the Superior Court of BC. They were convicted because they did actually plant the bombs, but they went on an appeal process. They were 3 years in prison. And it's only through the appeal that we learned about all the entrapment in the Mr. Big case. Most situations, there isn't the resources to go all the way to an appeal. So, you know, there's so many cases we'll never know about because this information isn't readily available and the powers that be do not want them to, you know, to be readily available.
Mm-hmm. So maybe now we can talk a little bit about how some groups have become less targeted and why is that so? So now inside of today's standards by one problem that we have is white nationalist groups that are on the rise and anti-Semitism on the rise as well too, which you think that maybe the government would try to look into that a little bit, or you know, work their way into those groups to find out more information on how what's the uptick inside of that, but instead they're spending more time onto people who are like climate activists, First Nations group, and like we said, the Islamist issues that we're having.
Yeah, I mean, this begs a lot of questions in terms of what is national security, right? Mm-hmm. Why is it that, you know, thousands of missing and murdered Indigenous women across our country, you know, is not considered a national security threat, right? Why is it that we're finding, you know, thousands of, you know, buried children across the country in unmarked graves not viewed as a national security threat? How is it that we have white supremacist groups, you know, publicly parading now, you know, screaming white power and, you know, death to so many different communities, and that's not being treated and understood as a national security threat. So it's, I think there's still a lot of white supremacy and racism that needs to be grappled with our understanding of who is the we when we speak of our national security, right? Who is included and who is excluded? And, you know, I think we've seen xenophobia be used time and time and time again through the last, you know, 150 years. Whenever there's any economic difficulties, it's easy to point fingers and say, it's the immigrants, it's the, you know, Muslims, it's the this community, they're stealing our jobs. And that plays into our narrative of who the, again, we need to be protected from. And that really needs to be dismantled and looked at. And as I mentioned earlier, the fact that national security is only now starting to be acknowledged as a collective national security threat and still not included in terms of policies, you know, begs a lot of questions. And we know Canada is a resource extractive country. That's what we've been, you know, this country has, you know, was built on in terms of mining, forestry, and oil extraction. And so that hasn't stopped. We're continuing to push through pipelines, you know, at, you know, $36 billion budgets, while forest fires are raging across the country, and the oil companies have a lot of vested interests, and the Canadian government supports that. So there's a strong unwillingness to include climate change under the umbrella of national security threats. So these clashes in terms of what is treated as a national security, there's a lot of people who benefit, there's a lot of money to be made, and there's still a long history of colonialism and white supremacy that I think needs to be unpackaged.
And addressed too as well too. So for our audience and for myself inside general, I was wondering this, are there any updates onto your end, onto Omar and Anna's appeals case, or how did they feel about the movie? I mean, it was such a grueling thing that they went through that they probably don't want to relive it by watching the movie, but how did they in general feel about the movie and any updates onto their appeal case?
Yeah, so the film ends with a card that it show that tells the viewers how, you know, just this year that Anna and Omar have launched a lawsuit against the Canadian government for the damages. So that will take a few years, and they just began that process this year. So through conversations with them, you know, I think the documentary process helped give them some confidence to be able to move forward with that. And I think it was actually a bit of an empowering experience to be able to share their story. And, you know, they trusted my practice and my process in terms of making this film. They, you know, their lawyers have watched their film. Through their lawyers, I know that they're very happy with the release of the film. They have not watched it themselves. As you mentioned, it's just too painful. And it's a re-traumatizing experience to have to relive what they went through. But, you know, they're very happy that their story is getting out and that it's something that can connect the dots to other cases and examples throughout Canadian history. Mm-hmm. you know, of the use of entrapment, Mr. Big and agent provocateurs.
No, exactly. And it's not just like a case through the news where they were labeled as, you know, the terrorists involved with the plot, as the news described them. You know, your documentary actually goes on to prove that it was a setup from, you know, the CSIS agents through that. So I highly recommend this documentary, and people can go and see it playing at Cinemas Pack as of Friday, August the 25th, where yourself and Alexandre Popovic, the author of Kudzri La Menace, which inspired this documentary, will be inside of attendance for the Friday, the August 25th at 7 o'clock screening at Cinemas Pack. However, it will be playing at Cinemas Pack for the week. Thank you so much for this interview and congratulations onto the film. We normally like to end our interviews with this question. So what has been a film that you have seen this year that everyone must seek out? Could be an old, could be a new, could be one in theaters.
Oh boy. You know, there's so many great films that are out there. And, you know, I hadn't been expecting this question, so I'm drawing a lot of blanks right now. But, you know, I go see Cinema Sous les Étoiles here in Montreal. I try to see so many documentaries that are out and about. And so there's been many that I've seen in over the summer in Cinema Sous les Étoiles. That are playing across the city. So I just love the experience. And I'm not going to, you know, specify Perfect. One film, but I will, you know, say there's a few more weeks of Cinema Sous les Étoiles. So if you're in Montreal, go catch out the, you know, free documentaries that are playing across the city in the evenings, and they run all summer. It's a wonderful opportunity we have in the city.
I will also let our audiences know that come November inside of Montreal, the RIDM Festival is back with some documentaries, and that's a complete festival, film festival inside of Montreal that runs documentary films. So I've always enjoyed as well too.
Yeah, RIDM is one of the best. Thank you so much for your interest, thank you for having me.